This is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. This week marks a year of Taliban rule in Afghanistan. It's a country that now has half its population suffering from acute hunger, while inflation is above 15%, fuel costs have doubled, and many are unemployed. Ajmal Ahmadi was the country's central bank governor before the Taliban takeover. We spoke to him a year ago about his decision to leave the country and decided to call him back this week to talk about the problems facing the economy now. Yesterday, it was reported the U.S. and the Taliban have ended talks with no resolution about whether to release some $7 billion in central bank assets frozen in the U.S. Mr. Ahmadi explains why there's been so much focus on those funds and what countries usually use them for.
International reserves for any country is the net sum of inflows and outflows out of that country. So for the past two decades, most of the inflows have come to Afghanistan via international aid. Those funds are used by central banks to pay for imports, but also to respond to shocks that hit the economy.
So they're mostly used basically as a sort of a monetary policy tool. They're not used for humanitarian aid. And the argument for them being released, they want to see that used to relieve the worsening humanitarian economic crisis in that country. But could they really be used in that way if they were released?
You are correct that they are typically not utilized in that way. But in this particular case, that was a proposal floated, I think, by international partners to use them for humanitarian purposes. I think there's a few parts to the story. So I think the first part is the fact that half of the reserves were allocated for the victims of September 11th and half for humanitarian support in Afghanistan. So that's, I think, one point of contention. And then the second is the Taliban would like to see it used to go back to the central bank and used for monetary and balance of payments issues, as we discussed. And I think the U.S. Treasury and other international partners, I think, want to create a humanitarian trust fund that would bypass the Taliban government.
A lot of people who are still living inside Afghanistan have told the BBC over the past year that they often feel like they've been abandoned by the international community. Here are a couple of those voices who told our colleagues that they feel essentially hopeless.
We're living in a very disappointing situation. We're left to wonder about our future. Over the past couple of years, Afghan women worked so hard to gain some of their rights, but the Taliban broke everything. I was in a wedding ceremony last night, and I asked girls how they felt about the situation. One of them told me, if I knew this would happen and we were banned from going to our schools, I would have cherished our school time more. The Taliban claim that the occupation of Afghanistan by the West is over. If that's true, why are they begging the U.S. to recognize them? Why are they using us, women, to blackmail the world?
The Taliban brought poverty, fear, and threat to our country. Over the past year, we have become destitute. We lost our freedom of speech and education. It's the darkest part of our history so far. People are very disappointed and hopeless about their future. All hopes we had from the international community are now turned into disappointment.
So, Ajmal, the question to you then is, you know, you mentioned that the Taliban wants control of those billions of dollars in reserves, but the question is, does the Taliban have experience at the central bank to really handle the dispersion or the use of that money if it does ever come back to the country?
I think even more broadly than that, Victoria, the conversation has been a bit skewed. Taking a step back, I think one thing that we have to discuss is the fact that the release of reserves or the use of reserves is not going to solve all the problems that Afghanistan is facing right now. On an annual basis, Afghanistan ran a $7 billion trade deficit, and that was financed by international aid. And so having just 1 year of reserves, even if it were to be released, would really only help Afghanistan for 1 year. So the broader question is, how is the international community going to continue to support Afghanistan through a combination of reserves release and additional budgetary support as they were providing for the previous government?
What do you think that model can and should look like?
On the international community side, it's coming to some sort of framework for how much they're going to provide for Afghanistan moving forward. So the fear was last year that that would drop to zero. And so you can think of that spectrum between 0 and 7. And what the international community has thus far decided to do was to provide $2 billion. That's how much has been provided approximately over the past year, according to the World Bank. So they're providing about 30% of what was previously provided. And what the international community are telling the Taliban is, well, we'd like to see reforms in a few different areas. We'd like to see women attend school. We'd like to see senior al-Qaeda figures not in Kabul. And that hasn't played out that according to anyone's wishes. And so that's why they're holding their line and saying, well, we're not going to provide more than this at this stage.
The government needs money from somewhere. And it said that it held a meeting with a Chinese business delegation just a couple of months ago. I mean, is there a risk that if the West and its allies continue to isolate Afghanistan, that it could increasingly turn to China and its allies? And do you think that poses some kind of risk or consequence to the international community if it does so?
No, I don't think we've seen any indication that China wants to invest large sums of money into Afghanistan. So they've, I think, provided some level of humanitarian support and alluded to potential investments, but not on the continued and large scale that Afghanistan needs. I think that firepower is with the multilateral financial institutions, such as the World Bank and IMF. And so I don't see that as a threat. I think the likely situation is that the international community is going to continue to provide support at approximately this level, maybe a $2 to $3 billion level, which averts a humanitarian disaster, but isn't sufficient to allow Afghanistan's economy to grow. And the reason we're in this stalemate is because I think the Taliban have taken decisions that the international community doesn't support, and it's hard for the international community to justify providing more funds.
We're talking about what kind of structure the economy. The FT had a really interesting story last week about a pickup in coal mining and exporting, and that's something the Taliban has really seized on. But that is coming with a number of its own problems. It's exploiting children as workers and other people who are just desperate for some kind of income. And I guess the thing about that, too, is that the practice, while it's lucrative when, you know, global commodity prices are high, it's good for the country's income. But does it risk sort of further moving the country and its economy backwards? Because the last government had been working on a green transition.
I think the Taliban are doing what they need to. So there have been some reports and indications in some World Bank reports that they are collecting customs revenue. They're supporting exports and getting export revenue. And so there's some additional sources of revenue that they're trying to generate. And they've been successful in some ways. But again, that probably adds an incremental 100 to 200, in a best case scenario, 300 million to their revenue stream. And again, what we were talking about is a drop of 5 billion. So it helps them. It allows them to balance their fiscal accounts, but at a much lower level of economic activity. And that's what the voices that you previously let me hear, that's what those people are talking about. There's a lower level of economic activity. And just to give you, put some numbers around this, you know, the GDP has contracted by 20 to 30%. That means that per capita income has dropped to around $360 per year, and that's about a dollar per day. That's the reason why poverty rates have increased to more than 90% of the population. And so you're now at a situation where you're somewhat stabilizing, but at a much lower rate of GDP.
Very tellingly, there was a news outlet this week that quoted one Taliban fighter as saying, "We might be poor, we might be facing hardships, but the white flag of Islam will now fly high forever in Afghanistan." I mean, is this just the new economic reality in the country? Or do you think the Taliban can get behind a plan that gets the international community on board and gets the economy in a more stable, long-lasting position?
It's definitely possible, but there are some decisions that have to be made. And so again, you know, I think two big turning points this year were, one, the decision in March where they decided not to allow girls to attend school beyond a certain age, and more recently when al-Qaeda was founded in central Kabul. So I think those kind of decisions erode the trust between the international community and the Taliban. And if there were ways to build that trust back by taking different policy decisions, then of course greater amounts of humanitarian aid could be provided. But it doesn't seem as though the Taliban would like to take those alternative policy paths.
Is this a new normal?
Unfortunately, unless different decisions are taken, I think, yes, we're at a steady state at a lower level of economic activity.
Ajmal Ahmadi, the former central bank governor of Afghanistan, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the program.